So, do you ever have a gift for somebody and you're going to meet them, but then you leave it on the kitchen table and then you realize when you're like almost there that you forgot the gift? So, you have to decide whether you're going to be really late because you went back to get the gift or just pretend that there was no gift at all when you get there on time. This is like that, but with a human being on Mars. It's The Martian, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, yeah, that Addy was singing the name of the show. It's the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm joined here by two. What are the extras in Sahara like? Two.
Small children playing soccer and shouting at cars.
Or camels.
Yeah, let's go with that and not people dying of poison.
Yeah.
It's Robin Hitchcock.
Hello.
And Camila Adams.
Ahoy, ahoy.
To be fair, I just posted the episode yesterday as we are recording this. So far, I have heard no reaction from anyone about Sahara itself.
Because no one's seen it. Sometimes you got to make your own fun. Sometimes you got to do one for you.
Right, right.
That's what I did.
And I appreciated it because, you know, when else was I going to see Sahara?
Right.
That's one of the many reasons I liked the drive-ins, you know, reviving every movie ever made over the course of last year, because it would be like, I don't think there was any other time I was going to revisit Peter Jackson's King Kong. But right. Apparently it was cheap to rent, so now I know that it's still okay.
Well, now we got Sahara out of the way, so.
I mean, right?
I think it was better this way as opposed to, like, being a random draw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sahara finished 54th overall on our list. So the middle of the pack. It's an okay movie, everybody. 58 1/3. That is the same score as Pretty in Pink. Robin's 71 for Sahara broke the tie. So Sahara lands just ahead of Pretty in Pink. Both of those are movies where me and Camila both gave it like 50 and a couple more. And Robin was like, it's good, though. About 70.
I like what I like.
Yeah, of course. It's somebody. We're building to The Martian. When I did the tweet, my here's what I'm watching right now tweet, which when it's for the podcast, I don't state the name of the movie. I state the year and I have a hint. And my hint for The Martian was just the poop emoji. Because this is a movie where, you know, poop is really kind of part of the inciting incident, right?
Saved his life.
And
that's like one of the only things I remembered about this movie.
Right. He has to use the shit to make the food. Just like life. Botany, everybody.
Yes.
Everyone assumed that it was a shit movie, that we were doing a shitty movie.
Oh.
Lauren Kozlowski, our internet friend, was like, it has to be Jurassic World, right? And I was like, sir.
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic World, 2015.
Oh, right? Well, Jurassic Park is the huge pile of shit also.
Right.
No, he assumed I meant this movie is shitty from 2015.
And Jurassic World is his go-to bad movie from 2015. Valid.
Maybe, but I wanted to be like, sir, what part of you thinks I'm capable of being objective about Jurassic World?
Right, yeah. Like, why would Sean Collier be like, yes, Jurassic World is a shitty movie?
Oh, did you load it with nostalgia and open the park? 10 out of 10, I don't care. Fallen Kingdom is terrible because I still maintain some taste. But
I kind of like that one. We can't handle the truth about it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think I gave it a 5. Like, I was like, listen, this entertained me for 2 hours instead of annoying me for 2.5 hours like Jurassic World did.
Fallen Kingdom being, what if we made the most dangerous dinosaur any of us could think of and then take it to a house and see what
okay, happens. There we go. Yeah, I did see that one.
Yeah. Anyway, Robin likes what she likes. I like dinosaurs. Camila likes
Tom Hardy.
Happy birthday. How will you be observing?
I don't know. I guess it's probably going to have to be watching a couple of Tom Hardy films and, you know, doing my wicked, terrible Tom Hardy impersonations. It used to be like on for Colin Farrell's birthday, I would just walk around and like my whole thing was like, I'm fucking and fighting and cursing and drinking. That's what I'm doing today.
So I've now seen the trailer for Venom, There Will Be Blood or whatever the hell it's called.
Right. Like, Let There Be Carnage.
That's but There Will Be Blood.
And people are like a little pumped. And I'm like, why though?
I'm not excited about it. I don't think I like this version of Tom Hardy in mainstream films. Like, I don't think I'm here for it.
The reason that I liked Venom, though, is that, it is a weird movie.
I mean, I enjoy it. It's entertaining, yeah. But I feel like this is not the version of Tommy that I like.
Yeah, yes.
Like, seeing him do normal things, like drink tea in bed or whatever, I'm like,
ah. Yeah, but he also, has a weird psychosexual relationship with himself. Like, that's the Tom Hardy that I do like. I never saw that movie where he plays multiple Tom Hardys.
They're twin brothers, so yeah.
I've seen some people be like, well, inevitably this is going to tie in and directly set up the Spider-Man movie that's coming out in 4 months because of reasons. And I'm like, don't count your chicken. Like, that you're setting yourself up to go to the theater and be like, I thought that Tom Holland, Tobey Maguire, and a cartoon Spider-Man were all going to be in it. And it's like, don't
that
get ahead.
They are setting themselves up for people being disappointed in that movie for not having, like, whichever characters they don't have, people are going to be mad that they weren't there.
Yeah,
and then also, they're setting themselves up by basically making the same movie as Into the Spider-Verse, which was perfect. Like, why? Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
But I am excited that they changed Woody Harrelson's hair from the end of... from the post-credit scene in the first Venom to what it's going to be like in the Carnage one. Because, what was that?
Also, I have another thing to say about the Venom sequel, but I want to save it for the You Can't Handle the Truth portion.
Word.
We will revisit somehow this oddly There Will Be Carnage-centric episode of the show. We'll get back around to this oft-delayed superhero sequel later on. But for now, The Martian. I reviewed this favorably, if not glowingly, at the time. I watched it and made all my notes and everything before I went back and read my review from 2015. And I won't spoil my score, but I felt about the same about it then that I do now. It's pretty good. The end. That's where I'm at. Where did you both see this at the time?
No.
It was nominated for a bunch of Oscars, so yes.
I did not see it.
And I remember liking it a good bit. And I won't spoil my score or the rest of the episode, but I mean, I will, actually. I'm kind of like, wait, what? Like, it's fine. Like, I think this is a very competent movie. But it is weird looking back and thinking that this was a Best Picture nominee, Best Actor nominee? What? Yeah, so it's weird looking back on how popular and well-reviewed this movie was for me.
And Camila just said, no.
At the time, because Matt Damon for 2.5 hours, but... after watching it, I hate to admit it, but I liked it.
Did you like Matt Damon, though?
He was at about 45% Matt Damon, so yeah, that I can, like, I didn't
mind him. So you were
at
45% wanting to punch him?
he was only, like, doing, like, 45% Matt Damon-type behavior, and I don't know, like, I was close, I almost shed a tear towards the end, but I did not. But, yeah, like, I liked it, and I was, like, really, I was surprised, like, I started it late, I was watching it on FX with commercials, I was even laying in bed at some point in time watching it, and I stayed engaged and never fell asleep throughout the whole thing. I was shocked.
And that is, like, I love how that is your, like, review heuristic.
Right.
Did I fall asleep?
I was awake for the entire 2.5 hours of Matt Damon through commercials. I was shocked. But I figured out, like, after the fact that Drew Goddard wrote it, I didn't know going in. And so, like, I like his writing. Like, I like a lot of his movies. So that was that.
Yeah, adore him. And I put this in my notes so I wouldn't forget to say it. I'm going to say it now. So back when I was in college, it was like the last season of Buffy was my freshman year of college. And me and my dad would send lengthy emails to each other after every episode, like dissecting the episode. And he loved Drew Goddard. And so all of the Drew Goddard episodes, he would say like, oh, well, obviously this was a good one because it's Drew Goddard. And because the guy who like invented rockets was named Robert Goddard, my dad would always call Drew Goddard Rocket Man. He was like, another Rocket Man episode. So of course it's good. And so it made me really happy to think that he wrote a space movie.
Right.
And I want to send that into the afterlife so my dad can know.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Rocket Man gets stuck in space, but they solve it with rocket things. It's very, that's nice.
Science, bitch.
So we skip the 60-second recap. You just nailed it.
Right.
Right. Well, we will answer the Matt Damon question on today's episode. But before we do, let's tell you, in case you didn't see The Martian and want to know why this isn't a sad space movie, it's a hopeful space movie. Robin will tell you exactly what this movie's about in 60 seconds or less. And go.
A manned mission to Mars goes awry when a dust storm damages their habitat, and a presumed dead Matt Damon is stranded alone. So Matt has to try to stay alive on Mars while the improbably stacked cast endeavors to rescue him. He watches Happy Days, listens to a lot of disco, and vlogs, because why the hell not? Water-creating explosions, shit potatoes, hexadecimal communication through a rover left over from the 90s, gravity slingshots, Chinese-assisted supply rockets, and a mutiny later, his crew returns and saves him while the world watches breathlessly. Everyone is nice and works together and believes in science, and it all feels like a fairy tale. This is super different than the other isolated in space movie from Ridley Scott that we watched.
That's true.
Yeah.
Commentary, summary, not even really bothering with the, like, Jeff Daniels is a villain a little bit.
Yeah, he's right. A villain for, like, being a tiny bit curt.
A tiny bit curt.
Right. Because
and
one
like,
person
a
is,
little
like...
practical, you know?
One, he's the only one who's like, it might not work. You're the villain of the movie.
Right, you know?
And I guess Kristen Wiig is also, you know, not like 100% positive character. But this is like a real Ted Lasso situation where it's like, everyone's nice.
Only 42 seconds to tell you basically what's going on in The Martian. And I don't have a ton of facts, so let's knock them out. The Martian was released October 2nd, 2015. It was the 27th number one movie of that year. Big opening weekend. There were no other wide releases, so The Martian made $54.3 million. And won its second weekend with $37 million. The only other debut was... that year's Peter Pan movie. This is the one where Hugh Jackman was Blackbeard and everyone sang Smells Like Teen Spirit for some reason.
Yeah, I've never seen that movie, but it seems wild.
That's all I remember about it. It's one of those, it's like, is there a law that we have to make a live action Peter Pan every 5 years and they all have to be like, okay? What?
Like, one of the silver linings of the pandemic is that Wendy came and went without anyone noticing it existed.
Oh, yeah.
Totally forgot about that.
Two reviews, and I was like, should I track that down? And then I moved on with my life. Pan came out that second weekend in third, $15.3 million. The Martian lost its third weekend only by about $2 million to the debuting Goosebumps, but then reclaimed the top spot for another 2 weeks. It was the number one movie in America in its fourth and fifth weekends. A total of 9 weeks in the top 10, $228.4 million. That's eighth for 2015. This movie made more than Spectre, the James Bond movie of that year, Cinderella, Ant-Man, a former episode subject, 50 Shades of Grey. None of these made as much as this potato movie. That means that the Martian is the top grossing Ridley Scott movie.
Really?
That's surprising.
Even were there not a pandemic, I would not anticipate that his two films this year, The Last Duel and House of Gucci, both forthcoming, probably not going to threaten The Martian. But both of those look kind of good.
Yeah, I mean, I love Ridley Scott. Like, I like even his bad movies. Like, I really enjoyed All the Money in the World. Like, he's just a solid filmmaker.
The Last Duel trailer I've seen a lot. And normally when it's like, we're talking quietly in the Middle Ages, I'm like, but that one, it's like, I want to see how this plays out.
Yeah, you know? Me too. I'm intrigued by both of those movies.
Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
The Martian was nominated for 7 Oscars. Robin, do you want to try?
Sure. Okay, so it was nominated for Best Picture and Best Actor. And I'm going to say probably both sound categories.
Correct.
And visual effects.
Yep.
Let's go editing.
No.
Ooh. Was it nominated for Best Director?
No.
Okay. Score?
No.
I don't know the other two.
You're missing production design, which is interesting because that's mainly just his little space house.
Right.
And the ship.
Yeah, but like we've done it, you know?
Yeah.
That's weird.
And adapted screenplay. Drew Goddard did get a nomination
for him.
Adapted screenplay. Do you know how many of those it won?
Zero.
Zero. An 0-for-7 performance at the. This is. I know I was on this rant probably on the show before, but like when everyone knows that a movie isn't going to win, why does it still get 8 nominations?
Because it's an honor just to be nominated. And because, like, I do think that it was, you know. I was going to say it's one of the 10 best movies of the year. That's not true. Like, come on. Justice for Carol. Anyway, regardless, I do think that movies should get nominations even if we know they're not going to win, because they should be honored by the nomination and include, if it's one of the best 5 performances, it deserves a nomination even if they'll never win.
This is one of those Oscar solutions. There is no, or Oscar problems in my mind and not in Robin's, that there is no solution to, because if a bunch of people vote, then you get a consensus.
Right.
I just, when I see something that I'm like, it's not going to win any of those, that's where, like, give it to do something interesting with that spot. Mm.
Okay.
Rather than saying, yes, The Martian was the 8th best movie this year, you know, shine a light on something that isn't, you know, full of stars and studio backing. And anyway, just complaining for no reason.
Sure.
It did win 2 Golden Globes. It won Best Picture Musical or Comedy and Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy. Camilla's face is right. Yes, this was categorized as a comedy.
Okay.
Golden Globes.
There's like, whatever, we don't know what to do with this. It's just like, that's the crumbs left over off the table after dinner. And this is like, this is what, that's what goes in that category of musical, comedy, whatever.
Also, not Ridley Scott was nominated there. 9 Critics' Choice Awards, no wins. It was in National Board of Review's top 10 movies of that year. Based on the book by Andy Weir, he originally published The Martian for free on his blog and in chapters. And when people were like, I want a readable version, he made a 99-cent Kindle version, because 99 cents is the lowest price you can make, and sold 35,000 of them. And then a major publishing house picked it up, and it became a huge hit. It, the paperback spent 19 weeks as the number one book in America on the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
Huh.
So, hey, publish that writing project you've been working on, kids.
Seriously.
Very, very briefly, because it comes up with every space movie, the consensus on whether or not this was accurate, it's more accurate than most things. It is not uniformly accurate, but it cared more than a lot of space movies care to try to be reasonable, particularly in the jet propulsion stuff, the big exaggeration is the reason that we have a problem in the first place. Apparently, there aren't storms like that on Mars.
Oh.
I was literally thinking about that at the beginning. I was like, I've never heard of this. Like, and they talk about the atmosphere being super thin. I'm like,
that's why.
What? Yeah. I know very little about science, but I know that.
Because the atmosphere is so thin, even with those conditions, which would be rare, it would feel like a light breeze.
Oh.
So, other than that, supposedly very accurate, finally, they really grew potatoes. That is my final fact.
Really?
Because they needed to have potatoes at different stages. They just set up a garden and grew lots of potatoes.
That's cute.
So that's nice.
I mean, yeah.
Good
that's,
for them.
But I mean, the props department, we couldn't just have potatoes in several different stages.
Right, like, go to the farmer's market.
Right, I know. Not that difficult.
Well, I think they were often. The studio was a giant studio somewhere in Eastern Europe. I want to say Bulgaria. And the outdoor scenes weren't really visual effects. That's just a desert in Jordan that looks a lot like Mars.
I like it.
The links from last week to this are a lot of open desert and people we feel ambivalent about named Matthew. You know,
I don't know if I'd say ambivalent about Damon.
I don't dislike him, but I'm trying to think of a reason why I don't dislike him. You know,
because he's a terrible person and he's a terrible human being.
That's I was going to say that if Matt Damon, if I only knew him from the movies, I would find him perfectly fine.
Right.
But because he said a lot of stupid shit over the years, my opinion of him has tanked, and watching him on screen is less compelling. And also, like, my main knock on this movie is that I think Matt Damon was miscast. I think that this character needs to be more of a dork.
Really?
Because, like, the character as written is such a dork.
Mm.
And Matt Damon just has too much, like, cool kid table energy.
Really?
To really be compelling here.
I feel like he's a dork trying to have cool kid energy. This is how I feel about Matt Damon.
Okay. So I was thinking about it a little bit more, and then I was like, you know who needs to be in this movie? My husband, Colin Hedrick. Because that is a super dorky, super charming scientist.
Well, I thought you were about to say Jeff Goldblum, but, you know, similar energy.
A young Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, you just need someone a little bit dorkier.
I'm glad it wasn't Jesse Eisenberg, because that would have been unwatchable.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No. I think he's good in this. He just has surprisingly limited range. He's not doing a bad job, but he's doing well within, I'm in a desperate situation, but I'm feeling positive today, or, man, this is rough. Like, that's the full range of his reactions, other than a few stray moments.
That's kind of my problem with that is that we don't know what his character is like before he gets into peril. So we don't, like, this just could be like that. That's what this character's vibe is anyway, all the time. It's just like, you know, all right, I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to be a dick about it. I'm just going to, you know, work the problem, figure it out, you know, get it done. And also he's got, like, he's vlogging. And so, you know,
right,
like, he's got all these cameras on him, like, randomly, you know, I'm like a punk. Like, cause he knows eventually that shit's going to get out. So it's not going to be a lot of weeping. I mean, there's probably some in the shower, but I feel like he probably had that mindset of, you know, I'm not going to let this outdo me. I mean, I have to stay focused and I can do this. I can work this problem. So that's kind of just what I feel like his character was.
Something I found really interesting about this movie is particularly watching it, you know, after 2020, you know, relating to quarantine, I guess, you know, like, the deal with this character is that he has a indomitable survival instinct, right? You know, he's going to do whatever it takes to survive. And it's kind of like, but why? And I don't know. Maybe that's me being super depressed right now. Who knows? But, like, they never really, like Camille was just saying, like, they just don't totally explore where that comes from.
Right.
And I didn't even know that he had a family until I watched the trailer.
That was the trailer was false. Because that was Michael Pena's
family.
Yes, that was Michael Pena's family. That was Michael Pena touching that screen. That wasn't Matt Damon. Matt Damon, all he had was his elderly parents.
All right. That makes more sense. Because, and as much as, like, I think that one of the things that makes this not a sad space movie is that he isn't like, I have to get home to my family.
Right.
But as much as I don't really want that in the movie, it would help explain why he's so, like, determined to live.
Maybe he's just determined to win. Maybe that's the
thing. Yeah. Right. But they should have explored that more.
Right.
To Camille's point about the setup, I was shocked when, you know, I knew that this movie is, what, about 135 minutes long, and he's alone on Mars after 10 minutes.
Yeah, right. They get right to it.
Right?
How are we going to fill 2 more hours if they really should have borrowed 20 minutes from the last hour of, you know, here's our new problem, here's our new problem,
right,
here's our today problem, and given that to the front half so that we, like, get to know, it'd be nice to get to know them a little bit more before the crisis.
Right.
The main problem that doesn't work for me in this film is when they have to catch him.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much math, and, like, I just don't, I have no concept of when they, like, part of it is because of the metric system.
Right. Yeah. They're like 5,000 kilometers. I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah. They're like, oh, no, he's going 40 meters per second. I'm like, well, that sounds fast.
I know.
Like, you guys, I don't know.
You guys seem upset about it. I guess it's bad. I don't know.
And then Jessica Chastain looks dumb in her little space throne.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I gave 2 points additional before that sequence where they're on a ribbon and trying not to die. That's because I was a little checked out in the back half because I'm like, all right, we know he's gonna survive. Can we get to it? And yeah. Then they're rolling around like a cat with a ball of string, and I'm tense again. I like that.
I thought it might end up being that he doesn't survive. I was kind of hoping, not because of anything about Matt Damon, but like, it'd be a decent twist. if he doesn't survive, like, it would be rough. But again, like, they don't give us a wife or a kid. Like, he has no wife or kid, so there's really, again, like, no reason that we, not that that's the only thing to stay alive for, but it's just like, you know, it wouldn't be quite as heartbreaking, I don't think.
Right.
this sounds rough, but I feel like it would have been like a really, it would have been very different, and I probably would have given it 10 more points had he not survived.
Wow. Yeah, I just think that'd be too bleak for me.
By the way, since Jessica Chastain's
everywhere
Zoomy space chair came up, this week's good Letterboxd lists include movies where Jessica Chastain gets fed up with the useless men around her, so she decides to save the world herself.
That's kind of her thing.
There were at least 7 legitimate choices, yes, this fits the theme on that list. And then A Most Violent Year was on there, and the author said, I haven't seen this yet, but probably. Also this week, the Martian appears in The Boring Straight Boy Canon. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And finally, movies in which a character shaves his beard to symbolize getting clean or learning to live correctly or having learned some kind of moral lesson or some other such bullshit.
I enjoyed the fact that it was such you have all these great actors. You have all these like bigger names and whatnot coming together, like all these known names in this movie. And there's a good balance between all of them. You know, because sometimes there's like you get these names and they could have been like real heavy handed and like lopsided on like a couple people. Nobody had, that I recall, like a death defying, like this hard monologue that no one delivered, like some over exaggerated monologue that I recall.
Yeah. But, yeah. You think that there would be like 6 of them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. The cast of this movie is ridic.
Right.
I actually laughed out loud when Donald Glover showed
right?
up.
Right? I was like, hey.
I was like, more? More?
It's like, this is the third act. We're still.
Right. And also, when you think about it, this was like when all of these actors were at like a pivotal like upswing in their career, with the exception of Jeff Daniels. But like, you know, Mackenzie Davis emerging, Donald Glover, like the It Boy, Jessica Chastain coming hot off 2 Oscar nominations, Tuatela Geofor coming hot off his Oscar nomination, and props to his agent for getting him the and credit, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like,
Kate Mara,
it's just
insisting she's a thing.
I mean, this was when she was a thing because of House of Cards. Right. Sebastian Stan, right off of his title character in a Marvel movie.
I know, like, so this was after he was Bucky, I'm assuming. He had like 2 lines in this movie.
I know, but yeah. I think that actors, and like, look at the casts of his upcoming movies, and I think that actors like working with Ridley Scott.
I want to say that the biggest plot twist was, I just kept waiting for Sean Bean to be beheaded for no reason. I don't know.
Sean Bean survived this film.
Right.
That should be a Letterboxd list.
But he is the only one that gets fired in a colossal series of fuck ups and at least 1 mutiny. The only person to lose their job.
And for what exactly? What was it? Because he decided to tell his crew or because he didn't want to tell his crew?
He made the mutiny happen. He was like, by the way, crew, you could do this.
Someone, the internet was really excited about the fact that they have a conversation explaining something through a Lord of the Rings metaphor, and he's the one who explained it.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Okay. Yeah. That's cute. Yeah. Yeah,
that was a moment I liked because, again, like, you have to think about these people work for NASA. They are the hugest dorks on Earth. So that was a nice moment of acknowledging that.
Yeah.
I will say I wasn't totally on board with Donald Glover's acting.
What? Here. I thought he was brilliant. Brilliant. What do you call it? Comic relief.
Okay. I'm glad you liked it. I just felt like he was, you could see him trying.
Hmm.
And that Troy, was so that's what didn't work for me.
Troy showed up and just was Abed. Is that what happened here?
I literally think that that is what he was doing.
Yeah, it's interesting to see him at the last possible moment where you could not know that he was in the movie. I thought he was fine. Oh, since we mentioned the trailer lying, Camila, take us through the trailer segment without a name.
The trailer segment without a name. Better or worse? We decided to view the trailers. I don't know if we are we all doing this before we watch the movie or does it matter?
I'm doing it after because that's how I like to do it.
Okay, I do it when I remember to do it. But yeah, so we decided to watch the trailers of the movies that we're going to be talking about to decide whether or not that trailer lives up to the film. Like, it's, yes, this is the film that I'm going to be seeing. The trailer is fully representing this, or is worse, makes the movie look better than or worse than. So yeah, we do need to come up with a name for this because that was really long.
I guarantee you that at some point everything's going to go south on you. And you're going to say, this is it. This is how I end.
Commander, Mark is dead.
We have to go now.
Now, you can either accept that, or you can get to work.
This will come as quite a shock to my crewmates. And to NASA. And to the entire world. But I'm still alive. Surprise. Here's the rub. It's gonna be 4 years for another mission to reach me.
And I'm gonna have designed to last 31 days.
I gotta make water and grow food on a planet where nothing grows.
Mark Watney's still alive.
Woo! In your face, Neil Armstrong.
So, I'm gonna have to science the shit out of this.
He's 50 million miles away from home. He's totally alone. What the hell is he thinking right now?
I am the greatest botanist on this planet.
I know how to save Mark Watney.
But we need the Hermes crew.
We either have a high chance of killing one or a low chance of killing six.
I'm not risking their lives.
It's bigger than one person.
No. It's not.
No matter what happens for the world, tell my family that I never stop fighting to make it home.
So, I believe I watched the trailer after I watched the movie. And of course, it was still kind of, you know, this is just 2015. And so I remember seeing the trailer a lot anyway and already.
Yeah.
So I had no interest in watching this movie, mostly because space or dude lost in space and Matt Damon lost in space. And I assumed it was going to be like a Castaway in space kind of situation. And I wasn't here for it. But I walking seeing it now after seeing the movie, I feel like the movie was better than the trailer.
I'm also going to vote that the movie was better than the trailer because the trailer makes the movie seem more like a sad spaceman movie than it actually is.
Right.
Like, it's very, it has a very serious tone.
It's like Armageddon.
For a movie that, like, we kind of scoff at the Golden Globes calling it a comedy, but it is a lighthearted movie.
Yeah. Yes, his life is in peril, but it's like, but is it?
But he's going to vlog and complain about disco.
And eventually learn to love it.
Yeah, I watched before the movie, and I, with both of you, the movie is better than the trailer. The trailer kind of has, the trailer sets up a very, this could be any story, action movie.
Right.
And this is primarily a movie about doing science. It's not, the trailer is very like, we have to get him, we're running out of time, there's an explosion. And it's like, no, this is about calculations.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it more interesting.
Yes.
That's what makes it different.
I learned what a soul was, and I learned about like Mars's day, because for the longest time, I don't know what he, like, he's talking about it, and I don't know if I missed that they an explanation in the beginning, but you know, you see it on the screen when he's vlogging, and you know, he's talking about souls. We had 36 souls, and at first I thought it was being like real, like spiritual and religious about we had 36 souls on this aircraft.
Like right. You feel like you only ever hear souls when a plane crashes.
Right, exactly. And then it was like, oh, S-O-L, souls. Like, what does that mean? So I had to Google it and to find out that the Mars day is like 24 hours, 36 minutes and some change as opposed to...
Yeah, it's very weird that Mars has a day so close to ours that is
right.
not...
So
Mars
yes.
is our little, it's like, it's literally our redheaded stepchild.
Yes. So with all the calculations and all the science that was going around in this space movie, I felt like I understood a lot more of it than I usually do in these movies. Partially because from the Faxi segment that most of it is true. Like it is right. actual and is not made up like, you know, Killadeagles, you know, things like that. Like Space Jams and whatever.
They talk you through it. They do another reason Colin Dedrick should be the star of The Martian. Like he excels at explaining science in plain language, and this movie does a great job of that.
Right. It's like, I know I'm not going to be able to go make water, but you know, I understand the process a little bit better than I did going in.
Apparently you could blow yourself up doing it.
Right.
Quick question though. Why is there no communication system whatsoever in their space base?
That's what he gets killed by.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. The antenna broke off. The antenna stabbed him. That's what it was. So why didn't he try harder to fix that?
That's a good question.
That helps out a lot because I'm like, all right, come on. I know some other movies have this problem where they're like, because space is big, we can send a message, but it won't get there for 2 weeks. Like, but they didn't even do that. They were just like, well, we have no way to talk to him.
At what point they say it will take 24 minutes to have a communication.
Mm. Right, right. I was surprised there wasn't, you know, a button he could press. So yes, if this communication tower is the thing that fell down, that makes more sense. Also, pack more DVDs. I mean, right? I'm not going to space anytime soon, but if I did, I'd be like, I need many entire runs of TV shows and like those discs that have four horror movies from the 50s. And I just need a wealth of content so it isn't right. all Happy Days.
Well, it's crazy because like what? They know that it takes apparently a year to get out there or something. Like I don't. So the trip alone and once you get there and whatnot and the trip back. Come on, guys. Like I've packed more stuff on a flight to Texas.
Anything else before we rate it? No. Well, I like it. I think that it's a little heavy-handed sometimes. I don't like that, you know, he's doing a vlog and is like, that assumes that nothing goes wrong. Cut to a thing going wrong. or I did take 3 points away for the line, Mars will come to fear my botany powers. but added two back because I like the ribbon thing at the end. So I landed on 79. I give it a 79. Robin?
I am giving it a 68.
Wow.
Is that low?
It's lower than I was expecting from you.
Okay. I think this is an aggressively fine movie.
Robin hates space. The only reason I am because it's not sad enough. I want my space movie to be about Brad Pitt staring at the wall because he knows he doesn't matter.
I want my space movie to be about Sigourney Weaver saving a cat.
And I guess the biggest plot twist of all, I give it an 83. Camila comes in with the highest score for a Matt Damon mostly solo film.
Who could have predicted that?
Not I. I would have said you're a dirty, filthy liar if somebody had told me this when this movie came out, that you're going to watch it and you're going to like it. Lies.
Well, that's why we do the show. You never know what's going to happen. You never know when I'm going to hate with honors or Camila's going to love The Martian.
Right.
And we land on a 76 2/3. That's a very solid score. That will not be in our top 10, but it'll be certainly in the top 20-25 as we're getting near 100th episode, everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, to the bingo card, man, is surveillance video getting checked off?
Yeah, buddy. Comedic actor takes a serious role. Kristen Wiig.
Comedic actor.
Kristen Wiig.
Ah, yep. I will allow that.
That's all I got.
I think that, did anyone specifically say that they didn't sign up for this?
I don't remember.
Because they signed up for some of it, and then they changed what they did. They literally didn't sign up for it.
I don't remember.
So Jessica Chastain says, you didn't sign up for this, or none of us, when it's time to add 500 days to go rescue
Matt Damon. Oh, that's right. I will allow that.
Oh, I got a bingo.
Nice.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
We are in uncharted territory. There have never been 3 bingos in a calendar year. I think Robin gets to like redesign the podcast now.
Right.
Like, we could be a cooking show next week.
Yeah, what is the prize for this?
I don't know.
Here, I propose this, and Camila can either confirm or deny it. That for a third bingo in a calendar year, Robin gets to come up with the theme or the game or the trope of the 100th episode.
Oh,
okay.
I'll accept.
I love it. That's great.
We were going to do something special, but we haven't really settled on what that would be yet.
So now the pressure's all on Robin.
I know, right? It's like, this is both a gift and a punishment.
It's a gift for you and us.
No, actually, it's a gift for Colin, because one night, a couple months ago, Colin and I went out to dinner and spent the entire time brainstorming ideas for our 100th episode.
Oh, well, look at that.
Yeah.
You're ahead of the game already.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't done a... Did we do something for 50? I don't think we did anything special for 50.
Mm-mm.
But when in the You Can't Handle the Truth days, we did... You know, I think on 100, we did our 10 favorite movies. And then on 200, the four of us...
Backdoor pilot.
The backdoor pilot for number one movie in America picked our best movie years ever. So, you know, something like that. And I trust that that it'll be a great move.
I have faith in you, Robin. I believe in you.
Thank you.
Camila's got to make more bingo cards.
Luckily, I've been on my game of writing down the things that I think about, like ideas for them. So it's I'm ready.
That brings us to the recently mentioned You Can't Handle the Truth. What's everybody watching?
Guys,
Camila's got arms in the air.
Guys, I went to the theater.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I saw Candyman.
Good choice. Good movie to come back to. Did you like it?
Well, we did the private screening, so that's
for
first and foremost. Mm-hmm. But yes, I liked it. But there are like a couple of elements in scenes that I'm like, why? Like, and not just because I felt like there was no real rhyme or reason for them to be there, unless we're really setting up for more in this franchise. There's going to be another film. So there were just like a couple of things that were just like, this doesn't make any sense. Why is this in here? I thought it was going to be more important. And then even like when credits started to roll, I'm like, I could have probably had another 20 more minutes. Like I feel like the story was just really not completely done being told yet.
Interesting. But
and also it was not as scary as I was hoping for. It was I feel it more of a psychological thriller. I feel like is what I walked away from, but I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed everyone's acting was great. The direction was wonderful. The costumes were amazing. The art pieces of, you know, because, you know, Yahya is supposed to be an artist, and so his artwork, I don't know who the actual artist was really, like, it really pulled me in, and I wanted to like know more about it. I wanted to see more. Like, there's a scene, he's like, you know, it doesn't spoil anything, but he like freaks out. He's like, don't look at these yet. And I'm just like I want to see them more, like close up. Like, I need to inspect these more. But all in all, I enjoyed it, and I'll more than likely watch it again, I'm sure.
You need the coffee table book, The Art of
Him. Right, yes.
This isn't really a spoiler, or it's a minor spoiler. This kind of establishes, I guess this is up for interpretation. Camila, tell me if you think I'm right. This establishes that there isn't one Candyman. Certain events make a Candyman, and there have been many Candymans over the years.
Yes,
right?
In every generation, a Candyman is born.
Right, he's like the Slayer.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
No, I guess, you know, when one... is a new one is created, is not a new one isn't triggered by the death of an old one is retired when a new one is triggered. I guess that's how that goes.
They set that up really quick because this movie's short. It's like 91 minutes.
Yeah,
so yeah, there is a little like wait, what happened? But that's just going to make me watch it again.
Right. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on getting back to the theater, though. How did it feel?
It was the first worrisome thing about when I was thinking about going back to the theater was that I'm not going to remember how to act in a movie theater because, you know, the whole talking thing. But then it was like it was just Dan and I. And so it was like, oh, we can totally talk. Still, it doesn't give up. Well, give a fuck. It was nice. But I mean, it was if you want to go back to the theater and you want to cheaply do the private screening, Penn Hills Theater is the way to go. It's only $25 and they're still doing, and that's like up to five people. And then anything after five people is $5 extra. Like $5 per person. Huh. So it's most affordable. And they're still doing like new movies too. Like, cause for a while they were doing just, you know, like the old shit.
And but $25, that's how much two movie tickets cost.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right. And their concession stand is super cheap too. But it's also, it's not like the most comfortable seats or it's like not really like a lush theater per se. So it was fine. It was worth it for me.
Robin.
I watched Cruella and like, I almost want to say that I loved it.
Oh, wow.
I know. Who would have thought? But it's too long. It is way too long. I thought it was over and there were 45 minutes left. But that aside, I very much enjoyed it. The music was really fun. It has like a kind of Guardians of the Galaxy-esque soundtrack. The costumes are amazing. The makeup. Oh, and it is an anti-dog film.
It really is.
And you know what? That is an incredibly underrepresented opinion. So I can't believe how much I liked it. I liked it. And then the other movie I watched, which I kind of recommend, is The Fortune Cookie from 1966, for which Walter Matthau won his Oscar. It is the first Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau pairing. It's a Billy Wilder movie about insurance fraud, and it's very enjoyable.
What made you watch it?
Because I am trying to watch every movie somebody's won an Oscar for, or somebody's won an acting Oscar for.
Oh, gotcha.
I haven't seen that one, but I did just rewatch Some Like It Hot from 7 years prior because I did so at Row House. If you're in Pittsburgh, Row House Cinema is reopened, and boy, is it great to go to a full theater knowing that everyone in there is vaccinated. That's really nice.
So Row House is requiring proof of vaccination.
Yeah.
You know where else you could do that? Arcade Comedy Theater.
Yeah. And by the way, Twitter commenters, everywhere I've gone that has asked to see my card has been full of people. It is clearly not acting as a deterrent. Everyone who's like, I'll never go there again. You were never there in the first place. But I've been there twice already. I saw Some Like It Hot, which is still excellent. And before that, during their like pre-open members period, I saw Set It Off. I found the heist movie I liked. Set It Off.
Was this the first time you saw it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's from before 2000.
Before 2000, okay. So I'm catching up.
Nice.
Yeah.
I loved that movie.
Oh, yeah.
That was purely like, this is the night that they were doing like one a day to like kind of get their sea legs under them before they started their soft opening just for members. That was just the day I happened to be free. And yeah, this is what I'm talking about. If you want me to care about the characters in the heist movie, make me root for them first. Right. Don't just make it 11 assholes walking around a casino going, you want one more score? Like, set up that they need to heist some shit, and then I'll be like, yeah, good. I'm not going to talk about Malignant yet, because
I read the spoilers and what?
I still have to finish watching it. I watched it, and I'm like, what is happening? I think I got maybe like a half an hour into it, and I'm like, I don't feel like this is what was advertised in the trailer.
Finish it.
Yeah, finish it. It's the best part is part of the problem is that it's wild, and I'm like, well, let's see that again. Part of it is I was falling asleep. This is a situation where I got a digital screener at 7 p.m. on Thursday night. I had something to do right then. So at like 9:30, I'm starting a screening, for review.
Wait a second. You got a digital screener an hour before it was available on HBO Max?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. This is the world we live in. But so I'm falling asleep, and I definitely fell asleep for a chunk of the ending and then woke up like, wait, what? And went back. And it didn't make more sense after that. Like, even after I was like, okay, how did these dots connect? They didn't. Cool. It's too wild for me to know what I think about it yet. But if you just want something that's not what you expect, go for Malignant. I could keep going. Backdraft isn't a good movie. I watched Backdraft.
Yeah,
it's not good.
I saw it way back when. I don't remember what I thought of it. I saw it, and that's it. That's all I've got. That I know that I have seen it.
My opinion, which I already shared with Sean when he texted me saying, wow, does Ron Howard not know how to make good movies? And then we went through his filmography and came to the conclusion, maybe not. But Backdraft is an objectively bad movie that I find very watchable. And I really like Robert De Niro's character, and like, I would watch a whole movie about him.
Yeah, I think Ron Howard makes watchable movies that occasionally are accidentally good. Like Apollo 13 is pretty good. And I haven't seen, you know, some of his big 80s movies. But, like, that movie is just a mess. And it's all hanging on the acting ability of Billy Baldwin, which,
yeah.
Woof.
Yeah. Like, the second to least, I don't know, marketable Baldwin? I don't know.
Wait, Robin, what were we doubling back to during?
Oh, thank you. Venom is going to be 90 minutes long. And people on the internet were like, that's not long enough. And I was like, come on. So it's interesting that Camila was saying that she thought Candyman was not long enough at 90 minutes.
Right.
I don't know. To me, 90 minutes is the perfect length of a movie. Some movies I'll allow an extra a half hour. And then, like, we get two movies a year that are allowed to be 3 hours long.
Even that. It's like, nah, I don't even, it's just, it's not okay. Like,
but yeah, the kids who are saying 90 minutes isn't enough time. Like, people also said that about the Mortal Kombat movie, which is completely vanished from my brain.
I think the Mortal Kombat movie is like exactly for supposed to be 90 minutes long. Yeah. Like, we're not really telling any deep trench stories here, as far as I tell. It's a movie based upon a video game from the 80s. 90 minutes is enough.
Right, and then I just remembered the only thing that I could possibly remember about that movie, which is that they never get to the tournament. So
no, they don't.
It's a 90-minute first act.
we're tearing through the final destinations over here because it's spooky season. Like 89 minutes each. There's a disaster. We flash back. Somebody goes, whoa, let's not go over there. There's the disaster again. Death follows them around. And then one of them survives. We're in and out. It's great.
I bought the whole collection recently.
We didn't talk about Shang-Chi, which I do. I like Shang-Chi a lot. It sets up a new Avenger really well. It has fun ties to the other movies. It's very cool because it's a little bit of a wuxia movie and it's a little bit of a fantasy movie. Marvel stretching out. I liked it a lot. There's no reason it had to be 132 minutes long. Yeah. Like, we go so deep into everybody's backstory. Last night I saw this movie, Blue Bayou, which is like an early Oscar contender type with Alicia Vikander, and writer, director, actor is a guy named Justin Chan.
I've been calling that movie a future This Had Oscar Buzz episode. I don't know if that's fair, but just on the basis of the Spotify audio trailer, I'm like, nope.
Yeah, it could get momentum or it might not. It's very good. He's a kid who was, well, he's an adult who was adopted from Korea by Americans as an infant, but because his parents did not do it right or just didn't fill out the right paperwork, he's eligible to be deported, which apparently is a real thing because this country's going great. There are tens of thousands of people who were just adopted as infants who might get deported because their parents didn't fill out the right paperwork 30 years ago. So it's a bit of a heavy movie. It's very good. Again, it's 119 minutes long, and it's a movie where not a lot happens. 90 minutes is fine. 90 minutes is a great length for a movie to be. This has been our collective TED Talk. So, hey, it's spooky season, everybody.
Yay! I feel like you guys are starting spooky season a little early, and yet.
Yes.
It's a tough time. I told Camila when she announced on Twitter that she's decided spooky season has begun. I was like, congratulations on practicing self-care.
Absolutely. So. If things keep up like this, spooky season is starting in June. Like, I don't even know.
Camila got to it late.
Apparently.
When Camila said that on Twitter, I already had the Halloween decorations out. I had been to Spirit several days ago when Camila said that.
Well, I think who responded? Connor, I forget his last name.
McCandless?
Yes, he responded that, you know, he likes to celebrate. He starts spooky season September 1st privately, but more publicly, he starts October 1st. That's as in decorating and whatnot. So
That's a good strategy.
I'm going to adopt Connor's plan on spooky season celebration.
Part of it was I had already been, I think you both know this, if you're listening, don't get mad if you go and I'm not there, and you wouldn't really know it was me anyway, because I'm not doing every single night, but as teased privately and to many people publicly, I just work at the Scare House this year.
Oh, wow, look at you.
I always wanted to. This year made like 10% more sense than any other year, like schedule-wise, so I was like, let's go.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I am now a haunt actor. And like orientation was in late August. Like the wheels of spooky season begin turning over the summer. So
here's the thing. We go directly from spooky season into the now super extended Christmas season. And in addition to hating dogs, I hate Christmas because I am a monster. And so it's this. This is just a rough way to close out a year for me.
Yeah, jeez. Oh, thing.
There are now four seasons. Nothing, summer, spooky, and Christmas. That's we're going to try to fit in three movies from our Halloween sub-list. This covers about 180, 190 movies from our big list that are horror or horror-adjacent. You know, nobody get, like, overjoyed because, like, yeah, there's a lot of exciting stuff on here, but there's some crap, too.
There's also Madea's Boo or whatever.
Don't act like we couldn't land on one of three Hotel Transylvanias, you know?
Or one of eight scary movies.
Yeah, we're going to try to get three episodes in, including the first one, which will cover Urban Legends Final Cut.
Interesting. Interesting.
Remember,
I don't know.
Jared Leto denied being in Urban Legends.
Did he?
What?
Did an interview? Somebody was like, "Okay, Jared Leto, Academy Award winner. Let's talk about your early films, Urban Legends." And he was like, "What?" He does not remember making that movie.
He's probably like for reasons well understandable. He was probably highly sedated at some point. Most of it.
And this is inferior sequel to that bad movie.
I feel like this was probably a straight to VHS situation.
Number one movie in America, and Urban Legend is not on our list. Urban Legend came out in 1998 with Jared Leto, and it is not a number one. It did okay.
Joey Lawrence!
Joey Lawrence is in it. Anthony Anderson, Loretta Devine.
I love Loretta Devine.
Looks like Ryan Gosling's wife, Eva Mendes.
This came out in September of 2000. Really? Number one movie in America, was it? I'm pulling it up.
I am shocked. You're like, this, shocked.
Much like Jared Leto, you're like, this can't be right.
It doesn't make sense because I, like,
It was released September 22nd, 2000, landing in first with $8.5 million, about $300,000 ahead of the debuting director's cut of The Exorcist. That was the weekend that they recut The Exorcist, and it almost was the number one movie in America, but no, by a couple hundred thousand,
wow.
It fell to Urban Legends Final Cut. Box Office Mojo flags that was during the Sydney Olympics. The Olympics are traditionally a box office depressant. But the box office loss is our gain because we get to do a whole show about the second Urban Legends movie. This couldn't have gone better.
This is exciting. I don't think I saw it. I've seen it. I know.
And I'm definitely watching both of them. How will I know? How will I be able to keep up with "We made a little movie about Urban Legends" if I don't see the first one?
It's clearly we have to watch both of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Robin, you don't have to.
Oh, I'm not going. I actually saw the original back when, like, that was like a movie I watched at a sleepover in high school.
Well, before we experience this joy that awaits us, The Martian was released October 2nd of 2015. What was the number one song in America?
Gonna play by the rules and guess Drake.
No.
Okay.
2015. I don't even know.
The Weeknd?
It is.
What?
The Hills?
Was it Can't Feel My Face?
Yeah. The Hills. Which one's that?
It's the, when I'm fucked up, it's the real me.
Okay.
A
little sad. It's a very sad song. I feel like 2015 is like, 2016, that's like when I really know pop music, because that's when I had a 40-minute commute. So I'm like, I know what was on the radio then.
In the same bizarrely compelling Rock and Roll Hall of Fame display of Super Bowl halftime shows, where I think I previously talked about Katy Perry's Left Shark being there.
Yeah, I think so.
They also had The Weeknd's Mirror Tunnels.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to run around the mirror tunnels. For, like, it wasn't even like, oh, interesting. It's like, let's go around here in circles a bunch. This is fun. He's a fun guy that's with depressing music. That's the innovation of the millennial pop hip-hop stars. It's like, this can be fun and devastating.
Yeah, my friends have a Spotify playlist called, like, an absolutely traumatic bop.
Yes.